Hello and welcome to We the People. Earlier this week, there were media reports that 56 women housekeeping staff of an institute of fashion technology in Hyderabad were sacked, allegedly after they complained of sexual harassment by an employee. One male employee who continues to work in the institute, while 56 women housekeeping staff were sacked. After protests and media scrutiny, the 56 women were reinstated in their jobs and an internal complaints committee is looking into the matter. In the same week, we saw a record number of women enter India's parliament. The 17th Lok Sabha has the highest number of women MPs elected in the 2019 polls. There's a record 78 women MPs in the new Lok Sabha. But even that is a trifling 14% only, despite women voters outnumbering male voters. Also, so India's parliament still a considerable distance from the reasonable measure of gender equality, but undoubtedly it has made strides. But we're asking tonight, what does this mean on the ground for Indian women? Will gender issues start getting some of the prominence it deserves? Does having more women in positions of leadership change anything on the ground? What does this mean for equal representation that goes beyond tokenism? We have on the show tonight, Raksha Khadse. She's a 31-year-old single mother of two and also two-term Lok Sabha MP from Ravar in Maharashtra. Alankrita Srivastava, filmmaker, writer, the director of the boundary-pushing, critically and I should say commercially acclaimed Lipstick Under My Burqa. Dolly Singh needs no introduction either. One of India's most well-known social media influencers, Trisha Shetty, advocate, social activist and founder of She Says, that is a non-profit that empowers women to act against sexual violence, and one of the first global Obama Foundation scholars. Trisha was also behind the Lahuka Lagan movement to abolish the tax on sanitary napkins. And Hamshini Shivakumar, founder and owner of Leapfrog Strategy Consulting, and Yashoshi Sengupta, former Miss India Universe, and last but not the least, Akash Dixit, Delhi-based advocate, Ashish Dixit, Delhi-based advocate, one of the lawyers also acting for Ms. Pachauri on part of his sexual harassment defense. I want to start with Raksha Khadse though. In 2013, when she was just 26, her husband Nikhil was shot himself in the head, allegedly because of depression, for many reasons, including losing an election by a very narrow margin. Today, she is a two-time MP. Raksha, thank you. I don't want to get into actually what happened with your husband Nikhil, but you're unique because your father-in-law has two daughters, but you were still given the baton. Aapke husband ke do behen hain, phir bhi aapko ticket gaya gaya. दिया गया था रावेर का टिकट आपको दिया गया था
वो बात तो है वो तो मैं भी बहुत प्राउड से बोलती हूँ और हमेशा बोलती हूँ मैं पार्लियामेंट में जब मैं पहली बार चुन के गई पार्लियामेंट में हमेशा तब मैंने देखा था कि सब सबके बेटियां वहां पे चुन के आई है सबके बेटे वहां पे चुन के आई है और मैं एक अकेली थी कि मैं एक बहू वहां पे चुन के आई थी और मुझे लगता है कि वही मेरे लिए बहुत प्राउड करने की एक चीज है कि वही खड़से साहब में भी वो यूनिक पॉइंट है कि उन्होंने अपनी दो बेटियां रहने के बाद भी उन्होंने अपने बहू को आगे किया और उन्होंने भी यही सोच के आगे किया कि उनका बेटा आज नहीं है लेकिन उनके बेटे की जगह मैं तो नहीं ले सकती लेकिन कोशिश कर सकती हूँ कि उन्होंने जो अपेक्षा उनके बेटे से रखी थी वही अपेक्षा मुझसे भी उन्होंने रखी और उनको लगता है कि मैं भी अच्छी तरह से काम कर पाऊंगी और उन्होंने कभी मुझे बहू के रूप में कभी देखा नहीं उन्होंने हमेशा उनकी छोटी बेटी समझ के ही उन्होंने मुझे आज तक संभाला है और आगे वो संभालेंगे जितना भी मेरा परिवार है मेरी मदर इन लॉ है मेरे सिस्टर इन लॉ है हमेशा उनका सपोर्ट रहा है मेरे पापा मम्मी मेरे भाई उन्होंने काफी सपोर्ट मुझे ये 6 सालों में उन्होंने किया जबकि मेरे बच्चे बहुत छोटे हैं जब मैं फर्स्ट बार चुन के आई तब मेरा बेटा 2 साल का था मेरी बेटी 4 साल की थी तभी मेरे सास ने काफी मुझे सपोर्ट किया और मुझे लगता है कि आज ये सब लोग मेरे पास है मेरा सपोर्ट बन के मेरे साथ खड़े हैं तो इसलिए मुझे लगता है कि ये सब लोग हमेशा से मुझे सपोर्ट करते आए इसलिए आज मैं ये मकाम तक पहुंच पाई हूँ
हाँ हमने पिक्चर्स देखे हैं कि आप कैंपेन कर रहे हो और एक बच्चा आपके 2 साल का बेटा आपकी गोदी में है वो टाइम कैसा था आपके लिए
वो काफी डिफिकल्ट फेज था मेरे लिए क्योंकि मेरे हस्बैंड को जाके सिर्फ 1 ही साल हुआ था और उनकी यादें मेरे साथ थी और उस फेज से निकलना भी मेरे लिए बहुत डिफिकल्ट था, लेकिन तब एक आशा थी कि चलो कुछ हम कर सकते हैं, हमारे में कुछ अच्छी क्वालिटीज है तो हम लोगों के सेवा के लिए वो देना चाहिए। और मेरे बच्चे मेरे साथ तभी भी थे, आज भी है। और मुझे ऑफकोर्स एक जब आप एक माँ की भूमिका निभाते हो या एक बहू की भूमिका निभाते हो तो आपके ऊपर बहुत रिस्पॉन्सिबिलिटी रहती है, आपको हमेशा ये डर रहता है कि आप कहीं गलत ना हो। तो ये डर तभी भी मेरे मन में था और आज भी कहीं ना कहीं है कि मैं मेरे बच्चों से दूर रहती हूँ, उनको क्या लगता होगा कि मम्मी हमें टाइम नहीं दे पाती है, या मेरे घर वालों को लगता होगा कि ये कोई मतलब हमें टाइम नहीं दे पाती है। लेकिन जब आप ये सब करते हो तो हर चीज अपने बच्चों को बताना है बहुत जरूरी है, और मैंने वही करने की कोशिश की कि जो भी मैं काम करती हूँ या जहां भी मैं जाती हूँ तो हमेशा मेरे बच्चों से ये सब बातें मैं शेयर करती रहती हूँ। और उस टाइम में मेरे बच्चों को कैंपेनिंग में मैं इसलिए लेके गई थी कि उनको भी पता चले कि हमारी माँ क्या काम कर रही है, नहीं तो हम कई चीजें बच्चों से उनको बताते नहीं है, हमें लगता है कि वो अभी छोटे हैं उनको क्या समझ में आएगा, लेकिन ऐसा नहीं है। हमें हर एक चीज बच्चों के साथ शेयर करनी चाहिए और कभी कभी उनके ओपिनियन भी हमारे काम में आते हैं, वो छोटे इसलिए उन्हें इग्नोर ना करते हुए उनका ओपिनियन भी लेना बहुत जरूरी मैं समझती हूँ। और आज तक मैंने ये 6 सालों में जो भी मैं करते आई हूँ या जहां भी मैं जाती हूँ या जो भी काम में नए से शुरुआत करती हूँ हमेशा मैं उनको बताती हूँ, तो मुझे एक कंफर्टेबल फीलिंग मेरे बच्चों की तरफ से भी आता है। वो भी ये बात समझते नहीं कि आज हमारे पापा नहीं है तो सब रिस्पॉन्सिबिलिटी हमारे मम्मी के पास है तो हमें उनको सपोर्ट करना चाहिए, क्योंकि बहुत ऐसे कई एक्सपीरियंस मेरे साथ है मेरे बच्चों के कि तभी मुझे भी ऐसा बहुत सैड फील होता है कि आज उनका एज नहीं है सब चीजें समझने की, लेकिन उसके बाद भी वो ये सब चीजें समझ रहे और मुझे सपोर्ट कर रहे हो।
Raksha, that's great advice actually for other working mothers, and I'm sure your children are very proud of you. But Raksha, असलियत ये है कि ज्यादातर पार्लियामेंट में women politicians तो किसी की बेटी है या बहू है या बीवी है किसी के।
नहीं देखो, एक बात हमें हमेशा ख्याल में रखनी चाहिए, और मेरे फादर इन लॉ भी हमेशा मुझे आज तक यही चीज बताते आए और यही चीज उन्होंने मुझे सिखाई कि आप किसी के नाम पे या किसी के सपोर्ट पे एक बार आप चुन के आ सकते हो, लेकिन अगली बार आप जब खड़े रहते हो इलेक्शन में तो आपका खुद का नेतृत्व होना चाहिए, खुद का एक काम होना चाहिए कि लोग आपको देख के चुन के लाए। डेफिनेटली उनके जब फैमिली आप कोई पॉलिटिकल फैमिली आप बिलोंग करते हो तो उनका सपोर्ट और उनके नाम से हम कुछ ना कुछ बेनिफिट होता है, पर जो उम्मीदवार रहता है उनको भी देखा जाता है कि किस ढंग से काम कर रहा है। नहीं तो फिर आज आप देख रहे हो कि राहुल जी की क्या अवस्था हुई है, तो ऐसा नहीं है कि पार्लियामेंट में ये सोचा जाता है कि ये इसकी बेटी या इसकी बहू या इसका बेटा है तो इसको कम चांस दे इसको ज्यादा चांस दे, ऐसा नहीं है। आप किस तरह से वहां पे काम कर रहे हो, आप किस तरह से वहां पे अपना क्वेश्चन रेस कर रहे हो या किस तरह से अपना विषय आप किस तरह से रख रहे हो, ये ज्यादा मैटर करता है। और जब हम फर्स्ट टाइम एमपीज थे तो आदरणीय सुमित्रा महाजन जी हमारी चेयरपर्सन थी, तो उन्होंने काफी हमारे नए लोगों का उत्साह बढ़ाया था हमेशा, वो जब भी हमें मिलती थी। क्योंकि मुझे एक अनुभव मेरा शेयर करना चाहूंगी, मैं जब मैं पहली बार खड़ी रही बोलने के लिए तो मुझे काफी डर लगा कि मैं कैसे बोल पाऊँ, तो हम पहले लिख के लेके जाते थे 0 और में बोलने के लिए, तो एक दो बार मैंने पढ़ के बोला तभी भी मैं घबरा के बोली, लेकिन तीसरी बार मैंने जब पढ़ना चालू किया तब मुझे मैडम ने टोका कि आप कितनी बार पढ़ के बोलोगे, अपने मन से बोलने की कोशिश करो। तो फिर मैंने चौथी बार ट्राई किया, चलो अभी गलत तो गलत तो एक बार अपने को विदाउट पेपर तो बोलना ही है, तो तब मैंने बोला और मैंने बहुत अच्छी तरह से बोला, तो एक कॉन्फिडेंस भी मैडम ने काफी हमारे नए सांसद हम जितने भी थे उनकी तरफ उन्होंने रखा और हमेशा वो हमें गाइडेंस करती थी।
Alright, so women do mentor and guide others, you're saying. That's good to know, Raksha. Raksha, ये पहली बार दो है कि पार्लियामेंट में इतनी women MPs है और इसकी बड़ी चर्चा हो रही है, बहुत हेडलाइंस लिखे गए हैं, much is made of it. But does this really make a difference, having more women in parliament? अब पॉलिसी इशू पे women's पॉइंट ऑफ व्यू क्या रिफ्लेक्ट होगी अब?
नहीं देखो, या डेफिनेटली ये इम्पोर्टेंट है क्योंकि आप जब भी समाज में काम करते हो कि आज जितने मेल है उतने ही फीमेल है, आज सब 50-50 है, तो डेफिनेटली जो महिलाओं की प्रॉब्लम है वो आप अच्छी तरह से वहाँ पे रख सकते हो, क्योंकि आज हमारा भारत देश ये मतलब गांव के नाम से पहचाना जाता है कि सबसे ज्यादा विलेजेस हमारे देश में है, और गांव के सबसे बड़ी ज्यादा समस्या आज तक रही है, और सबसे ज्यादा समस्या मुझे लगता है कि जो महिलाएं घर में रहती है या महिलाएं काम करती है वो ज्यादा सबसे ज्यादा फेस करती है, तो उनको ये छोटी छोटी प्रॉब्लम डेफिनेटली पता रहती है। एग्जाम्पल मैं देना चाहूंगी कि आज हम बात करते हैं कि पानी की सबसे बड़ी समस्या आज है, लेकिन कहीं गांवों में आज मतलब पानी ना होने के कारण 20 दिन पानी नहीं आता है, उनको पानी नहीं मिल पाता है, लेकिन पानी की कैसे बचत की जाए एक महिला ही समझ सकती है और महिला ही जानती है। तो ये कई छोटे छोटे ऐसी समस्या है कि जो महिला समझती है।
अच्छा, एंड लास्टली रक्षा, व्हाट वुड यू से टू दोज हु से दैट वुमेन आर गिवन पॉलिटिकल रोल्स? पंचायत से शुरुआत होती है कि वुमेन बेसिकली प्रॉक्सीज होते हैं, वो कहते हैं जो आपके हस्बैंड्स की व्यू है या आपके पिता के व्यू है या फादर्स इन लॉ के व्यू है।
वैसे नहीं रहा है, ये 5-6 साल में काफी चीजें बदली है, और ये बदली है तो ग्राउंड से बदली है, वैसा कुछ भी नहीं रहा है। आप जितने भी पार्लियामेंट देखो, जब कोई फैमिली का मेंबर आता है तो आपको सपोर्ट करने के लिए आता है, और ऐसी कही मतलब कही लोग मतलब कही महिला है कि जो पहली बार घर से बाहर निकलती है तो एक डर उनके मन में रहता है, लेकिन फैमिली सपोर्ट करने के लिए आती है। इसका मतलब ये नहीं है कि हर कोई डिसीजन आपके ऊपर थोपा जाएगा, आप उतनी इंडिपेंडेंट है, और महिलाएं भी समझती है कि उनको क्या करना है नहीं करना है, सजेशन लेना ये अलग बात है, लेकिन आज के युग में तो भी वैसा हो नहीं रहा है, और मुझे वैसा दिखा नहीं, क्योंकि मुझे पता है, क्योंकि मेरा एग्जाम्पल देना चाहूंगी मैं, मेरा करियर मैंने शुरू किया था जब मैं 21 एज की थी, जब मैंने सरपंच से मैंने शुरू किया, तो मेरे फादर इन लॉ मेरे हस्बैंड तब थे, तो उन्होंने कभी मेरे ऊपर डिसीजन कभी थोपा नहीं, और उन्होंने कभी मेरे इसमें इंटरफेरेंस किया नहीं, वो हमेशा एक ही चीज मुझे बताते थे कि आप जो भी करोगे वो अच्छे से करो, आपको कहीं भी हमारे सपोर्ट की जरूरत पड़ी तो हमको आप बोलिए। तो ऐसा आज के तारीख में तो मुझे ऐसा कहीं दिखाई नहीं देता है कि आपके हस्बैंड या आपके फादर ये सब चीजों में इंटरफेयर करेंगे।
All right, thank you, Raksha, for joining us, for your time. All the best, congratulations, and all the best for this second term in Parliament and representing women all over India. Thanks so much. So, Dolly, you know, like we turn to Raksha and MPs, women MPs like her in Parliament to raise the voices of women, we have women, the presence of women on social media, which is where basically most of India's youth is on nowadays, raising women-centric issues like you do and your partners do on your site, like Gauram Lakche and other things.
Yeah. I think most of our youth is, like you said, on social media. So it's very important for that social media to kind of reflect what we are going through, to kind of reflect the issues that we are facing and the topics that we need to discuss. And as a creator on social media, I think it's also a responsibility that I have to, you know, sometimes talk about it. It's not like, since I am a comedian, I cannot obviously talk about it every day, as much as I would like to. But, you know, kind of put it out there. Given a chance, whenever I get a chance like that, I try to talk about it. I try to make videos which are humorous, but at the same time, they kind of, you know, pinpoint that one issue that maybe we're all going through. I remember last year when the whole Me Too movement was going on, I made a video on which, you know, it was like one of those memes, things only girls will relate to. And it starts with a very simple, you know, simple things like lipstick on your teeth and your bra falling, and just like, you know, things not fitting you right, simple things like that, and suddenly it takes a turn of, you know, you being assaulted on the streets, Eve teased, then a co-worker kind of touching you, a relative touching you inappropriately, ends with a date kind of harassing you. And the point is that these are still things only women will relate to. So in that sense, I kind of mixed the two things, humor and, you know, the reality of what we're living
in. Also breaking a stereotype that women can't be humorous.
Yes, God, please, women can be funny when they want to be. So, I mean, I think it's very, very important for us to, on social media, talk about it as much. And I think because all the young people are there, it becomes.
And we need to change the minds of the youth also going forward.
Yeah,
but
thankfully
you also push boundaries because you create a lot of content, as you're talking about, also you know, about very women who are sexually aware.
Yeah, I have this character called Zenith. I think most of my all the characters that we do, we've created them in such ways that they are flawed, but they are bold and they are who they are. My character Zenith is mostly, she talks about salam, aaj hum aaye hain, and she talks about her sexual desires, about the men, the kind of men she wants to date, that, you know, they must be like this, they must be good looking and this and that, but in the end they must be feminist. And she's very bold in that sense of what she wants in life and what kind of a partner is she looking for, and is she going through Tinder matches and meeting out people and, you know, things like that. So I think, yeah, through these
but
characters.
What's the reactions, what sort of reactions
people
do you
love
get?
It.
What about?
I mean, it's also, I think, the kind of.
What about pushback?
Are
we ready to see such a sexually liberated woman talking so openly about everything that you're saying? Being
not
so
really.
Bold, as you put it.
I think it's only funny when it's on the screen. If I go out there and I'm like, dude, I like you like this, and I do not like you like this, and this is who I am, I don't think people will appreciate it, and I'll be called out. But I think it's just because it's humor that it's tolerated. At the same time, I would want to say that because it's humor, you kind of very easily, you know, sweep this thing in their mindsets that it's okay to be like this. And if you're liking it in humor basis, then even if in reality you meet a woman like that, be okay and accept them like that, because that's just types of people, and you have to accept them the way they are.
But do you get acceptance? Because you talk about empowerment, but on social media is where you found your voice, where you found your sense of identity, the way you are, your shape, your size.
Yeah.
And I mean, you don't care what people think about it.
I mean, it's come from a lot of ignorance and a lot of kind of putting myself in a hard shell, thinking, okay, I don't care about this.
Okay, so you weren't always like that.
No, I obviously not. But yeah, I mean, you will get hate on social media, and social media is a place where you cannot control anything. The moment you put something out there, it's on people's, you know, judgments, and then you cannot stop anyone from saying anything. Like yesterday, I put up a picture saying, it was a picture in a swimsuit, and I put up a funny caption saying, Jal Pari or Jal Kukri. So what do you want to choose? And this random man out of nowhere comes and says, Na Jal Pari, Na Jal Kukri, Tu hai Thele se li hui Kakri. So now I've reached a stage, thankfully,
was
where
he
it
anonymous?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's good.
Yeah. Some men actually really go out there. And it's mostly men. To, you know, they get triggered so easily, even on social media. It's so funny. Like, it now feels funny, and I feel like triggering them even more. You know what I mean? Like,
more.
Irritating them. Like, saying things that they would never like. And these are the things that we really just want to talk about, and we just want to normalize, like periods and sex and period blood and, you know, everything that they find disgusting, and they find, oh, we should not talk about this. And sad to see that even a lot of women come out and say things like, if I make a video on my period, talk about certain things, I've made a video on, you know, bikini wax and things like that. And a lot of women also come out, hey, you shouldn't be talking about this in the open. It's like, it's a hush-hush topic.
Do you know, young women, older women?
When it's older women, it's not a surprise. But when it's some young women who are your age, who are from your generation, then it's a big surprise that a person like this is talking in certain ways. But I also think that it's the conditioning, it's for where they're coming from, it's how they've been taught and, you know, what they're seeing in the world. So I think when it hurts me is when a woman says it. I think the men, I really don't care about their opinions. I get really excited. So my chart on Instagram is 75% women and 25% men, which makes me so happy. I generally sometimes, you know, when I open it, I'm like, okay, is it lower than 25 now? Because I really wish it is. Because I think I really want to just cater to women and don't really want the men to kind of throw their judgments on me, because most of the times it's not really good. And it's also, I really appreciate when the man actually comes forward and appreciates that kind of content. That's also very surprising and very, it's such a breath of fresh air. You just want to like appreciate that man, even though you shouldn't, because that's the, that's just being normal. And that's how it should
be.
Well,
our bar is so low for men.
The bar is so low, exactly. You clap for them and they're like, when they give you a thumbs up on that, you know, feminist content. You're like, okay, wow.
We have Trisha has joined us now in Mumbai. Trisha, you know, Vogue India featured you as one of the 10 women taking over the world, one industry at a time. So let's ask you whether having a woman at the helm of whichever industry she's in actually makes a difference on the ground. Trisha, we spoke with a woman MP, second time woman MP. For the first time, we have 78 women MPs in Parliament. Does having more elected women in Parliament affect the policies that we see coming out of Parliament? Will they reflect women's issues more?
Thank you. And of course, we have empirical data to prove this as well. When you have more women in leadership positions, when you have more women within the political space, the policies that are then put forth are not just gender sensitive, but they also account for the country's GDP as a whole. So we know for a fact that when you increase women's labor participation, specific to India, if you increase women's labor participation, the GDP will grow by 700 billion by 2025. Even when you talk about the World Bank has invested over $3 billion working with the state government to ensure that rural women are empowered to be in leadership positions. So time and again, we see that when we move beyond this tokenization, but truly look at equal representation of women across sections of society, representatives from marginalized communities, from the scheduled castes, Dalit communities, from vulnerable communities, being in leadership positions, they don't just advocate for their own rights, but they advocate for the family rights, for community rights, as well as put forward policies that doesn't just benefit women, but benefit society as a whole.
So you're saying if we had had a woman finance minister in the past, there would have been she would have been the head of the chairman of the GST commission, and perhaps we wouldn't even have to have this whole fight not to have a tax on sanitary towels?
I completely agree. I mean, when firstly, let me commend the government for actually putting women in leadership positions in higher numbers than we've ever seen before. But yes, of course, when we put forth this whole issue of having sanitary napkins be tax-free, but beyond that also, we looked at how do we make sure women have guaranteed access to menstrual hygiene products, even beyond the tax element of it, because a lot of women still will not be able to afford menstrual hygiene products even after the tax is gone.
A minority of women
but then
in
we
India
would see
have
before
the ability to pay and buy and use
only 12%.
Yeah.
Only 12%.
Wow.
Only 12%. The rest of the 455 million women are forced to use unsafe alternatives like cloth, ash, plastic, dried leaves, sand. And, you know, India is the second leading cause for cervical cancer death rates around the world with a clear link to poor menstrual hygiene. This is the second leading cause for young girls to drop out of school upon reaching menarche after forced labor. So there are very real repercussions to women not having access to sanitation. But the upsetting part before was, you know, bindi and sindoor was classified as tax-free, whereas menstrual hygiene products were not. So it was reflective. And also at that point, there was not one woman within the entire Ministry of Finance Council that was looking at the GST, the tier of allocations. So of course it would be reflective. When you don't have one woman at the table, how will a woman then will not call you out and tell you, listen, we can survive without bindi and sindoor, but we need access to menstrual hygiene products.
You're right, which is why also you see in the US, in these states that are, you know, creating bans on abortion or access to abortions, all the panels are completely male-dominated, old white men making the decisions on what women should do with their bodies. But going back to the issue of whether, it doesn't always necessarily mean that having women in parliament will lead to more women-friendly issues being voted for. For example, in Mumbai recently, Shiv Sena women leaders had some protests about mannequins in lingerie shops. More seriously, the rape of a young 8-year-old girl didn't get women across all parties to come together and break party lines to come and fight for a young child who had been raped.
So one thing, when we're talking about Ms. Mhatre, the Shiv Sena representative who's been asking for the last 6 years, I believe, for the mannequins with lingerie to be banned. In the same vein, I do want to highlight that she's also the first woman who's come forward and asked for women to have menstrual leave, recognizing that a lot of families are nuclear families and that women are actively participating at the workforce. So she's advocated for menstrual leave. She's also the same woman who's advocated for paternity leave for new fathers. So as ridiculous as her demand to remove lingeries out of mannequins is, I also do want to commend her for these progressive policies that she's fought for. That again doesn't just help women women, but helps the entire family system as we know it. As for what you said in terms of priorities, this is why it's so important to look beyond tokenization and have equal representation. Representation of women from across religions, across vulnerable communities, across marginalized communities. So we don't just see the same group of women who are disconnected from reality more often than not in leadership positions. And I think this is where we as a people need to move beyond this tokenization, but ask for, okay, how many numbers? This is where 33% reservation bill. You know, now is the best time for the government to push for it.
Will that actually go through?
I think that's another topic that we should be talking about.
And also,
with such a mandate, they can push for it.
You also had a key lawmaker who helped push for eliminating the tax on sanitary towels, Member of Parliament Sushmita Dev. So there is mentorship that does come,
yes,
or help
do.
Leadership that comes by having women in Parliament.
Yes, and this was a topic that did receive bipartisan support. So Ms. Sushmita Dev did see our petition, and that's when she picked it up as an issue to take it forward as well. And even at that point, we saw Arun Jaitley receive her. So we did see bipartisan support on this issue. And the genius about this was, when we put it forward as a people's issue, the campaign that we raised, Lahu Ka Lagan, it wasn't just put forth as an issue through a women-centric lens, but we had people across all sections of society representing all genders come forward and raise this issue, because they recognize that if you remove barriers to women, to access to education, to access to employment, then you ensure that it's not just women that will be empowered, but the society as a whole will be empowered.
All right. Alankrita also joins us from Mumbai. Alankrita, we're going on about the numbers of women in Parliament when we're the biggest democracy, the largest democracy in the world, but we're also the biggest film industry in the world, and we don't have women sitting in the director's seat or behind the cameras.
I think it's a huge issue that the representation of women behind the camera is still so sort of limited, and of course things are changing, but I think recently there was some report, and I think the number of women making films is in India is like close to just about 6%. So that means only 6% of films that are made are actually made by women, and we are 50% of the population. And I think it's really interesting that every year when you have, like, you know, two or three new female filmmakers emerging, everyone's like, oh no, things have really changed, there's so many more people. But actually you can count them, still you can still count them on your fingertips. So I do feel that, you know, the way patriarchy is sort of entrenched in our culture, and the way it sort of keeps getting solidified, there is a huge connection with the fact that there are not enough women out there to tell the to tell the stories they want to tell from their point of view, and so it kind of keeps affecting the kind of protagonist you are, how you're looking at women, even how you're looking at men, how you're looking at the relationship between men and women. So I really feel that the true way of actually changing cinema culture and having a more inclusive kind of culture, which is not so patriarchal, which challenges the status quo, is to have like a situation where there could be perhaps really moving towards 50-50, which is having 50% of films being made by women and 50% of all films actually having female protagonists. So I do think it's very, very important. And until like there is equal, like, you know, the numbers are equal, I feel the kind of cinema that we produce will continue to be non-inclusive and misogynist and not really representative of, you know, of the entire country, because I feel like when 50% of the voices are really not heard.
So, Alankrita, things are changing slowly in Bollywood specifically, but as Dolly was pointing out, sometimes it's the women, we ourselves internalize what society's expectations are of us. And recently, even though actresses, writers, etc. are coming out, every time a Bollywood actress is asked about whether she's a feminist, they immediately shy away from that.
Yeah, I feel it's very sad that you know, like we, like you and I and all the women on this panel, we are actually sitting here today and having this conversation on national television because of the battles that the feminists of earlier generations have fought. And I feel very, very sad and heartbroken at, you know, the attitude that women often have to disassociate themselves with the term feminism, because I feel if there was no feminism, we wouldn't have an equal right to education, to vote, to drive, to work. So I feel that it's like a limited understanding. And often when people say that, you know, we are not feminist, or, you know, we believe in equal rights, if you're not feminist, I think somewhere they feel like they're going to be branded as extremists. And it also stems from this sort of conditioning of patriarchy, where you feel like if you stand up for, you know, too much for women, then you're going to be perceived as a threat and all of that. So I just feel it's also lack of understanding that, you know, about what feminism means. And I feel like if we believe that men and women should have, you know, equal rights and equal opportunities, then, you know, we are feminist. And I feel that we should own it, actually, because if there was no feminism, really, like, we wouldn't be sitting here today and having this conversation.
Perhaps they also feel that, you know, it could affect them in terms of work, in terms of the offers that they get.
Definitely. I think that, you know, things are changing. They're changing very, very slowly. And I think, like, the newer lot of filmmakers and actors, I think, is a little more sort of embracive of like a more feminist point of view, whether it's, you know, talking about equal pay or more roles, which are, you know, stronger roles for women and having more women behind the camera. But I think, of course, there is this fear that you just don't want to be branded as somebody who's, you know, like too rebellious, etc. And maybe that's why people say that they don't want to be known as feminist. But I really think, like, time's up on that. And it's really important for us to embrace the fact that we should have a more equal world. And if you're saying you're not feminist, essentially what you're saying is you don't believe in equality. You feel like women should, you know, be second-class citizens.
So time's up, as you say, as Uyoshi also said a week ago, when she found herself standing up for a taxi driver in a cab that she was driving in, who had been harassed by antisocial elements. Uyoshi, as we're talking about perception, women's perception, you found that a picture of an empowered woman who would actually come to the support of a taxi driver being harassed wasn't acceptable to the press. As I spoke with you a little earlier about this, they just couldn't handle the fact that that was probably what you were doing. So you found yourself covered in the press as a report of someone who had been violated. Tell us what happened, actually.
Hi, Sarah. So my name is pronounced as Ushoshi.
Ushoshi. Thank you. Sorry about that.
On Monday nights. No. On Monday night, when I was coming back home from work, I was accompanied by a colleague, and my Uber driver got into a little road rage with, you know, two boys on a bike, and then it resulted in a mob violence, which led the boys to chase our car and eventually come in front of my colleague's house and break down the car and try to snatch my phone to delete the video which I had shot at the venue at the time when the incident was happening. But yeah, eventually, you know, some of the media reports were suggested that, you know, Miss Universe India got molested. And I really wanted to be very firm about the fact that this entire case was a case of public safety. And it was assault on my driver, and I just stood for it. And I also somewhere down the line believe that I don't want, you know, the accused people to be punished for something that they have not done. They should be punished for what they have done to set an example. And
that's,
I think,
a great point.
It was very important for me to you know, to stand up for a cause which the purpose was much bigger, and not to dilute it under the mask of any other thing.
But in a sense, did you feel that, you know, this, you didn't fit the stereotype that there was this woman, and how dare she take a video of us, which is why they then turned on you? And even for the press, it's like, you know, why would she stand up for this driver if something else hadn't happened?
I think that's just the kind of upbringing I've had. My father's a defense officer. He was serving the Indian Air Force. So I've always seen him stand up for things that is wrong. And I think I've always done it. So when the incident happened that night, it wasn't something It just came very naturally to me to stand up for the driver, because I just didn't want to turn my face away from the fact that he was being assaulted, and I just couldn't keep quiet. And I think women are more courageous that way, you know.
Shoshi, I just have to ask, many would point out that, you know, you're speaking out now, many are seeing you as a role model because of the way you behaved, but many would say that you come from an industry where women are really objectified. So how do you straddle both worlds then?
Yeah. You know, I would like to, women are objectified. Sarah, I'm sure you'll agree with me that that objectification bit is in every industry. I'm sure if you walk into a corporate house also, and if there is a smart and good looking woman who's really working hard to climb the charts, there will always be perceptions behind that. But I think that's more societal conditioning. But I think thanks to a lot of women who have charted the path for us, and they have really worked hard and created a path that we as young women can follow. For me, it was very important to set an example as Miss India, because I am a representation. I have always represented this country, and I think to stand up for something that was an acute issue with the safety of my people was something that came naturally to me. And women are objectified everywhere, but we are still here, fighting it out and creating path-breaking examples for the world.
Hamshini, you agree? The corporate world no different?
I think women try hard in the corporate world, at least the ones who are quite committed to their career, to not represent themselves as extremely feminine. Mm. Because that automatically invites a lot of negative comments when you push for power. Yeah. Actually, the real issue is, in our country and perhaps in all parts of the world, when women push hard for power
yes.
and to share power, that's when things get ugly.
Correct.
As long as you're performing, as in you're doing your job well and you're delivering results and all that.
And you know
that,
your place.
And yes, you're in your place, you're not really threatening the order, then it's fine. You're a very good employee, and there'll be lots of studies on how women make excellent workers. They are very diligent. You know, they're very hardworking, yeah. They are more sincere, etc. But all that doesn't, beyond a point, help the cause, because, when you push for power, then the ugly side comes out. And then are you equipped to deal with it? How do you find your own way to deal with that is actually a challenge. And a lot of women who could be in very senior leadership positions in big corporates actually also withdraw because yeah. they feel or they don't want to, deal with that.
But is it easier having a woman boss or at the helm of a corporate company when it comes to laws like, after the Vishakha judgment where you have to have an ICC or even maternity leave for women?
I definitely think that if you have senior leadership who are women, many of these issues, the decisions taken do change. I was at a talk where there was an interesting statistics that was put out that for diversity and inclusion studies and membership of corporate boards, one of the studies showed that if there's a group of people, let's say there are 10 people, if there's only one person who's different, then that person doesn't really get a voice at all.
Yeah.
You need at least 3 to 4 people who are different from the majority for the minority view to actually start making a difference, to be heard, and to have genuine influence on outcomes. So when you have more women at the top, definitely sensitivity to
there's been so much written about the fact that after the new law on maternity leave, that many companies, the heads have come out to openly say, look, this is just going to mean that we're going to employ fewer women.
Yes, some of these progressive laws, I'm afraid, I also think that it could have, for every progressive law, there's the law of unintended consequences as well. And it could result in that because of the costs. and because of the pain, you know, people might want to have project the progressive image. So therefore, they will not reduce the number down to zero. They'll keep a certain number, but they will also hold the cost line.
Yeah.
You know, to make sure that it doesn't cross that number.
And
that,
women,
that's a very real danger.
And women could be equally guilty of that. Just yes. as women politicians may not speak up on women's issues, because you have a business to run, you're a small entrepreneur.
Exactly. Well, when you're a woman CEO, at the end of the day, you are a CEO first.
Wow,
you
okay.
are paid to be, you know, to deliver on responsibilities of that position. So it is, I am CEO first, and then layered with I am woman or I am whatever, you know,
mother
the other identity that I want to sort of espouse, or I want to act, you know, do some activism around. But it will tend to be secondary to your primary responsibility, which is your fiduciary responsibility as CEO.
Ashish, a really crucial aspect of all of this, of change, is the law. Has anything changed on the ground after the Vishakha Commission, for example, laws?
See, Vishakha came in 2013. The Act came in 2013, and I think the legislature made a tremendous mistake, because the Supreme Court directed them to implement law in 1997. It was implemented in 2013, but still, it's nowhere on the ground. I have done so many cases in which the ICC is not there. The woman is not able to file complaints. You'll be surprised to know that our political parties who are running the country don't have ICCs. I am doing a matter, I'm representing a woman who filed a complaint against the IT cell of Congress party. There was no ICC. And this, there was a very important issue with regard to that, if woman is on the top.
Yeah.
In that case, the IT cell in charge was a woman. And the complainant has given a statement that when she reported this matter to that lady, she said, you have to deal with it. It's part of the work culture. You have to deal with it. And this is a 164 statement recorded before a magistrate, and charge sheet is filed. So this is the condition.
As was the case in the MJ Akbar case.
So MJ Akbar, see, I'm not sure what
the
was
Telka
the action.
Case.
Yes.
All
so
the women,
you
know, the
so just
women.
Because having a woman on the top doesn't automatically, you know, that she will be helping the other woman. My personal experience is not so. But yes, over the last 5-7 years, we have to give credit to the government that they are doing something, which is, you know, which, for example, maternity leave. And you see the finance minister is a woman. We had the speaker woman. And now let us see whether this maternity act has been implemented on ground. 2017 till date, what has been done? I'll ask you. Does NDTV has a crèche in this premises?
A crèche?
Crèche.
Yes, we do.
We've had
one for years.
That's what. This is how the things have to be.
But NDTV is a little microcosm of.
No. I'm telling you because we are sitting here. It was very nice because now you can say that you have a crèche. Supreme Court had last year. Now
yes.
High Court, we had this issue that crèche should be there because the law requires it. But before that, there was no.
So we do need the laws. And that's that NDTV has had a crèche before any of this was made
so
legally.
So this is something
years,
very important.
20 years
this is
now.
Something which should be promoted.
But
even after law,
he's touched upon something very important, and perhaps, you know, it's taken a man to say this, that it's the women sometimes. If you're the head of the ICC and it's a woman and you go and complain, she tells you that you have to deal with it because we've internalized it ourselves that this is normal. Anyone?
I think.
Yes, that is true. And if you have risen through a certain system and you have risen to the top, and that's the message that you have got, then that is what you will tend to pass down. And it takes a lot of self-reflection on the part of women leaders to actually reimagine that an alternate way is possible, and then to become a spokesperson for that alternate better way.
Correct.
Or the newer way.
This is
way.
The glass ceiling that Alankrita is talking about. Alankrita, this is what you're saying. Our predecessors, the feminists who broke the ice for us, have been through a certain system. So often, sometimes difficult for them to understand that for the next generation, for our generation, we absolutely cannot accept this. This is something unfathomable for us.
Yeah, I totally agree, because I feel like the way patriarchy functions it is that it makes women the watchdogs of patriarchy. So it's just like, it's just getting passed on. I feel even in families, at a workplace, you know, in the film culture, for instance, something as misogynist as an item song has also been shot by women, you know, and they're not thinking on how they're using the camera. And how they're like making the camera randomly travel over a woman's body when it has no connection to the narrative. because that's what they've been watching, and they feel, okay, that's how it's done, that's what is expected of us, etc. So I do feel in many, many ways, whether it is like not encouraging a woman who's feeling like she's been assaulted, not encouraging her to speak up, or just continuing the same traditions of patriarchy and therefore continuing to let women be sort of disempowered and controlled by more powerful people. I think this is a system that I totally agree. I think it's like sometimes it really requires like taking a step back, reflecting and reimagining a scenario where that is not the case, because we are constantly playing by the rules that have been set by men. And we can't imagine that it's not like we have to change the rules. We have to make totally like fresh rules. It's not like, correct, you know, it's the way the world functions is actually like, just convenient to men.
Like Trishna, you know, the two TMC MPs who went to Parliament to pick up their badges on day one wearing pants and a shirt got horribly trolled on social media, while Gautam Gambhir, who also went in a tracksuit and a t-shirt, got away untouched. But like you said, sometimes they give it back, and these two MPs did give it back, pointing out the hypocrisy of this.
You know, you're absolutely right. I think when people put forth their objections to women dressing how they want to dress, claiming their agency, it seems to make people very uncomfortable. And the people that it makes uncomfortable, I think it's reflective of their internalized patriarchy, much like Alankrita has been highlighting. Another thing that I want to highlight is that, you know, when we talk about if we push forward for progressive policies, then women are looked at as unhirable. This is also the same rhetoric we hear every time we talk about sexual harassment cases, right? Where they say now, after the whole Me Too movement, we've heard this time and again with employers saying, oh, now we would rather not hire women at all. Let them not be there at all so that we don't have to deal with sexual harassment in the first place. So my point is, where does it stop? Every time we demand for equal rights, every time we demand for the discrimination and violence that we are facing within workplaces to be addressed, we are looked at as non-hireable. According to me, having worked in this space, the only way we can address it is, one, by rejecting that argument altogether of people who say women will then be unhirable, and rejecting it through three aspects. One is pushing for policies. Yeah. And laws. Why not have policies in place where you ensure that you must have a minimum percentage of women within your workplace? Maybe 33% for workplaces as well. Second is access to policies. Now, there may be very many great policies, but how many people have access to these policies? For example, there's a great policy that talks about addressing sexual harassment in higher educational institutes. That's a gender-neutral policy that also is accessible to people from the LGBTQI community, also men, that a lot of people are not aware of. So if you're sexually harassed within higher educational institutes, you can seek recourse through this. And the last thing is accountability. Now, this is where we are severely lacking. Even though we have good policies and robust laws in place, the accountability factor is severely lacking. For example, if your ICC does not take your complaint, or you're not happy as an aggrieved party, where do you go next? You don't go to the LCC. You have to go to the Women's Commission. Right. There is no direct setup place as well where you can have, you know, there's a step-by-step protocol. For example, if a police station does not take your FIR, there is section 154.3 under the CRPC where you can file a complaint to the higher authorities, the senior police officials. If they also don't take cognizance of your complaint, there's section 156.3 where you can file a complaint with the judicial magistrate. So you have that accountability measure in place. When it comes to workplace harassment, you don't have that accountability measure. Yeah. So that is where we need to really pinpoint and focus down and double down on what is the accountability measure and how can we ensure that the government plays an active role in all of this. Because we as citizens can only do a certain part. This is where the government has to step in, because as tax-paying citizens, it is very much the prerogative of the government to ensure safety of women, to ensure that women are not being discriminated against, and this is where they can push forward for policies.
And which is why perhaps having more women would make a difference. But you want to say something?
I wanted to bring to the notice that Sexual Harassment Act does contain a provision with regard to penalty for not having ICC.
Yes.
But even then it has not been implemented. And as this panelist pointed out, that if suppose ICC is not taking your complaint, you have a mechanism where the district committee has to take the complaint and they will adjudicate. And if you are not satisfied with that outcome, you have a right to appeal under the same act. Yeah. So mechanism is totally provided in the act. It depends how it is implemented. And at that stage, it is also important for women to make sure that it is implemented. If you are filing a complaint, you make sure that it is taken to a logical conclusion. Because mechanism is there. It is up to me as an individual to walk ahead. It may be tough, But it has to be taken to a logical conclusion.
It has to come from you. Okay, one second. All right, go ahead.
I just wanted to quickly highlight, you know, now under the IC, under the POSH Act also, there is a there's a specific provision that says if as an aggrieved party, a woman specifically, if you're filing a case with your ICC, that's your Internal Complaints Committee, and say that offence that has been committed against you also qualifies as an offence under IPC. So say you've been sexually harassed, you're outraging modesty, which is 354A. Then the ICC must also assist you in filing your police complaint through the whole FIR process. Now, this is where I'm saying there is no specific provision to ensure compliance is being met. There is no specific body. You may go to the women's district. Trust me, I work with the ICC. We work on sexual harassment cases on ground. If you go and try to ensure accountability is being taken care of, and if ICC fails you, say an ICC does not agree to come with you to the police station or provide you the necessary assistance to file your FIR, show me one instance where the Women's Commission has stepped in or the district magistrate has stepped in and helped. It just does not happen on ground, and that's why we need to double down on accountability.
Hamshini, are you aware, as you know, the head of a company or a small entrepreneur, that the company is responsible of making sure that if somebody complains that you have to file a police complaint, for example? Do most companies know that? Or
no. In fact, I was just thinking that actually, for example, I did an MBA degree, and lots of people go and do MBAs. But even in an MBA course, you are not taught, there's not even a single course which says legal responsibilities or legal recourse or legal requirements, etc., etc. So actually,
much
not
needs to change. We also need to become more aware, even of like you can't
yeah,
just
actually
have
a lot of legal
of
education
power, is required. Let's is go in for a short break and come back on the other side and take this forward. All right, you're watching We the People. We have let's get a quick audience response here.
I think हम लोग यहाँ पर बात कर रहे हैं accountability की या कोई policies बनाने की, लेकिन मुझे लगता है कि सबसे पहले हमें जरूरत है इस समय working woman policy बनाने की, जो कि इसके बारे में आज तक ना ही तो हमारी संसद ध्यान दे रही है ना ही कुछ, क्योंकि companies ने जो working women के लिए policy बना दी है उसी को follow करते जा रहे हैं और उसी के दौरान ये सब sexual harassment and जो working women के साथ जो violence हो रहा है ये सब चीजें अभी ध्यान में आ रही हैं। लेकिन अगर एक वर्किंग वुमेन्स के लिए पॉलिसी बन जाए तो शायद ये सब चीजें इन पे कमी लाई जा सकती है।
Alright, thank you so much, sir. आपने बात की. We are completely out of time. This is We the People. We believe it's important to speak up, but also important to listen. Thank you all for joining us on a night when everybody's watching cricket matches to talk about a very crucial issue. Thanks again and good night.